This is Radio Times. I'm Artie Moscowen. Cats are a YouTube sensation. Who hasn't been charmed by videos of kittens wrestling or snoozing or just looking adorable? A new report by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the Smithsonian Conservation Biology Institute presents a very different picture of cats in this country. The scientists said that free-ranging cats were responsible for killing almost 2.5 billion birds and 12 billion mammals every year. So today on Radio Times, we want to talk about the study, the impact cats have on wildlife, and how to manage their population. We begin our conversation with Stanley Temple. He's the Beers Bascom Professor Emeritus in Conservation at the University of Wisconsin, also a senior fellow at the Aldo Leopold Foundation. He did some of the earliest studies on free-roaming cats and their impact on bird populations. And Stanley Temple, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good to be here.
Do you find these numbers high? We're talking about billions of birds and billions of small mammals every year killed by cats?
Not really, because since we did work 25 years ago, there have been dozens of studies around the country that have all come to very similar conclusions about predation rates. The unique thing about the current study is that they have tried to combine the results from all of these dozens of studies to try to come up with a national estimate of the toll that cats take. But indeed, there's nothing in the individual studies that would lead one to believe that these numbers aren't quite realistic.
How, though, do you study free-roaming cats and their killing, frankly, of birds and small mammals? How do you do that study?
Well, our study in Wisconsin looked at rural cats. We didn't look at the urban and suburban cats. We looked at the rural cats that have the most access to wildlife. And we looked at their predation in a number of ways. We collected cat scats, cat droppings. We also, when we captured cats alive in live traps, we gave them an emetic to get them to regurgitate their stomach content, something that anyone who has a pet cat knows isn't unusual for cats.
Yes.
And we also did direct observations of cats that had radio collars on. So using these three sources of data, in Wisconsin, we came up with the estimate that each free-ranging rural cat kills at least 5.6 birds per year. And we also did a survey that suggested that there were approximately 1.4 million rural cats in Wisconsin. So if you combine those two numbers together, 5.6 birds per cat and 1.4 million cats in rural Wisconsin, you come up with 7.8 million birds killed in rural Wisconsin each year.
And that's one state, and it doesn't include mammals. When you talk about free-ranging cats, for those people that are not versed in the kind of science that you're doing, what does that mean?
A free-ranging cat is simply one that has free access to the out-of-doors. It can include, here in Wisconsin, especially the dairy state, a lot of what are popularly known as barn cats in the rural countryside. It can include cats that are owned, that are pet cats, but that are allowed to freely go outside. Here in Wisconsin, with severe winters, we don't have any truly feral cats in rural areas. The winters are too harsh. But in other areas, there are truly feral cats that are living more or less independently of people. So those would be the categories, you might say, of free-ranging cats.
And for the unowned or even the feral cats, do they do most of the killing? Because I'm thinking that house cats, even if they're let outside, probably aren't hungry.
Well, it turns out that behaviorally killing, hunting in cats is not directly related to their state of hunger. Mm-hmm. So even a very well-fed house cat will kill if it's given access to prey. In our study in Wisconsin, when we looked at rural cats that were pets, that were owned, that were fed and given veterinary care by their owners but allowed to free range, and compared them with free-ranging cats that were not pets, that were simply barn cats, we actually found that their predation rate was quite similar.
Hmm.
In other words, per hour of time outside, they killed roughly equivalent numbers of animals. The difference, of course, is that barn cats are out there all the time, and pet cats are confined part of the time. So in terms of absolute numbers, the feral cats or barn cats that are outside all the time do actually kill a totally large number of animals.
Are there certain species of birds that are vulnerable, or I don't know if you've looked at mammals or certain mammal species that are vulnerable to cat predation?
Well, this is actually what prompted our study 25 years ago. We were quite concerned that the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the state of Wisconsin had in the late 1980s initiated programs to encourage farmers to create wildlife habitat on the farm. And we were looking in those habitats to see how wildlife was responding. And we were quite alarmed to see that those areas close to farmsteads had large numbers of cats hunting them. So we proposed this study to try to assess what the impact might actually be. And because this was a very targeted study in rural areas of Wisconsin, we looked at all wildlife and tried to assess not only the numbers of animals that were killed, but what the impact would be on the populations in these areas that cats are hunting. We found, for example, that these free-ranging cats in rural Wisconsin kill about three times as many mammals as they do birds. Mm. But what was particularly alarming was that the birds that they tend to hunt most frequently are grassland birds, birds that spend most of their time on the ground out in grasslands, which in Wisconsin is mostly hay fields and pastures. And those are a group of birds that are in serious conservation trouble throughout the Midwest. So the losses to them are alarming. And indeed, we could estimate what those losses were on a percentage basis. Based on our surveys of the bird populations in the areas that these cats hunted, about 6 to 9% of the birds that lived within the hunting range of these cats were killed each year.
In preparation for the show, I was doing some research and I noticed headlines, things like killer cats. Are you comfortable with that description?
Well, the whole issue has become highly emotional. And part of the problem, I think, is that there are two, if you'll say, advocacy groups that have very different views about the problem and what to do about it. On one hand, you have conservationists who are concerned about the impact that free-ranging cats have on our native wildlife. And on the other hand, you have a group of people that I'll call cat advocates that are very fond of cats and are motivated primarily by their concern for the welfare of cats. So you've got these two groups that often disconnect with one another and get particularly inflamed when you see media headlines like killer cats. It really is a disconnect in that the conservationists who are concerned about cat predation by and large tend to focus on populations and species, whereas the cat advocates tend by and large to focus on the welfare of individual cats. And what, that is a big disconnect.
What has been the reaction of cat advocates, as you call them, to the research that you've done on predatory cats?
Well, the early work, including our own here in Wisconsin, was met by a sort of an anticipated response, I guess, from cat advocates. They tried to discredit the researchers and discredit the work that we had done. And it got to the point here in Wisconsin where I received multiple very serious death threats.
Really?
Which were completely unexpected and certainly sort of crossed the pale in terms of having a healthy public debate.
Over the
years, the attacks on all of these dozens of studies of cat predation have sort of run the same course. Claim that the numbers are wild exaggerations, claim that the researchers were cat haters who were only motivated by a desire to persecute cats and so forth. And I've noticed, at least over the last week or so, that the response to the current meta-analysis, looking at the nationwide impacts, that the tactics, the response from the cat advocates have changed a bit in that they are now actually saying, well, okay, perhaps the numbers are accurate, but it doesn't make any difference.
Well, let's. I need to just get a second guest in on our conversation, Stanley Temple. And Bob Curry, sitting across from me, he's an ornithologist, ecologist, professor of biology at Villanova University. And Bob Curry, nice to have you with us on Radio Times. And I know your research has looked at islands and this impact of cats on birds in islands. What can you tell us?
Right. Well, we've known for a long time that island populations of birds and other wildlife are particularly vulnerable to introduced predators, largely because they're naive to the predators. They've evolved in systems where there are no native predators, at least not mammals. So that makes them much more likely to be heavily preyed upon if cats are introduced, or rats, or dogs, or other predators.
Are cats more dangerous or more lethal than those other?
That's hard to say. It varies, as Dr. Temple indicated, it varies depending on the ecology of the different wildlife species. So ground nesting birds are very vulnerable to cats. Birds that nest high in trees, probably less vulnerable to cats and more vulnerable to things like black rats, which actually can climb very well,
really?
Which surprises a lot of people. But the combined impact is bad. For sure. So there are several clear examples of historical extinctions on islands that were almost entirely attributable to cats. There are a number of systems involving, for example, burrow nesting seabirds. A lot of the small to medium-sized seabirds like shearwaters nest in burrows in the rainforest parts of tropical islands. And if there are cats on those islands, they just sit outside the burrows and pick off both the adults and the young seabirds as they try to leave the burrows. And so there's just the ground can be littered with dead birds.
And I do want to pick up on that. And I just want to give you the last word here, Stanley Temple, because we have to say goodbye to you. But I think you've sort of laid out this potential conflict, people that care about wildlife and trying to figure out if there can be some consensus or we can get along on this particular issue. Do you have any sense of that?
Oh, I certainly do, having been a target of a lot of the controversy. But right now we're at something of an impasse over what the cat advocates have proposed as the solution to what everyone agrees is an overabundance of free-ranging cats in the U.S., and that is the trap, neuter, and release program, which from an ecological perspective is a failure because it continues to maintain large numbers of free-ranging cats out there in the environment where they will continue to kill wildlife. The trap, neuter, and release program is viewed as an alternative to humane euthanasia for unwanted cats. It certainly satisfies the cat advocates' desire to look after the welfare of individual cats and to not euthanize cats. But at the same time, it is not a solution that will be ecologically acceptable.
And I gotta jump in here. Stanley Temple, thank you so much for joining us on Radio Times. We'll pick up on that very point after this short break. We'll be right back.
The Wistar Institute supports WHYY-FM. I'm Dr. Russell Kaufman, president of the Wistar Institute. The newest cancer treatments almost always start with a breakthrough in basic science research. Wistar researchers identify the causes of cancer, and this can lead to treatments that directly target the causes without the harmful side effects of older cancer therapies. Basic research saves lives and needs your support. To learn more about how you can join us and help save lives, wistar.org.
I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Have you made a pledge of support to WHYY yet? Since you're listening to Radio Times, you owe it to yourself to become a member. For a $60 pledge, that's just $5 a month, ask for the very cool-looking Radio Times anniversary mug designed by the award-winning Tony Auth. Here's that phone number. It's 1-888-345-9499. That's 1-888-345-WHYY. You can also pledge online at WHYY.org. You'll be glad you did, I promise.
In Philadelphia, everyone is reading The Buddha in the Attic by Julie Otsuka, a poetic novel that traces the collective experiences of Japanese picture brides from the turn of the 20th century to the onset of World War II. A joint project of the Office of the Mayor and the Free Library of Philadelphia, One Book, One Philadelphia features 8 weeks of discussions, performances, and workshops through March 13th. Details at freelibrary.org/onebook. The Free Library of Philadelphia supports WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Artie Moss-Cohen. We're talking about a new report that says that outdoor cats are a major threat to wildlife. Free-ranging cats, including pets that go outside, strays and feral cats as well, are a leading cause for the death of birds and small mammals, killing billions every year. I just said goodbye to Stanley Temple, the Beers Bascom Professor Emeritus in Conservation at the University of Wisconsin. He did some of the earliest studies on free-roaming cats and their impact on bird populations. Bob Carey staying with us for the rest of the hour. He's an ornithologist, ecologist, professor of biology at Villanova University, vice president of the Wilson Ornithological Society, and vice chair, board of directors of the Ornithological Council. And Wayne Pacelli has been listening in, and he joins us once again on Radio Times, president, chief executive officer of the Humane Society of the United States, author of a book called The Bond, Our Kinship with Animals, Our Call to Defend Them. And Wayne Pacelli, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks, Marty.
Well, let me pick up on this study. And we heard from both Stanley Temple and I think Bob Curry would agree that this study raises some important questions and concerns about free roaming cats. And do you share their concerns?
Well, it's not a new subject for us. And obviously, this study was largely derivative. It looked at what other studies have done and then aggregated the information. It came up with some pretty startling numbers, as you indicated in your setup and in your discussion with the gentleman from Wisconsin. We've long been concerned about cat predation on wildlife, and we're concerned about the effects on cats of being outdoors. Their lifespans are shorter than those who are indoors. And I think, Marty, we've got a pretty distinct and somewhat unique perspective at the Humane Society of the United States. We have one of the largest companion animal departments with professionals who look at dog and cat and other companion animal issues. But we also have a wildlife and habitat protection department. We have 126 people who work at the Humane Society of the United States just focused on wildlife policy and program issues. So I think we bring a perspective that really does recognize that cat predation on wildlife is a real issue. But we also believe that the humane community, local humane societies, SPCAs, other animal care organizations, rescue organizations, and most importantly, feral cat advocate groups are actually on the front edge of trying to deal with these problems by promoting spaying and neutering, by promoting keeping cats indoors, as the Humane Society of the United States does, and by really, obviously, you know, fostering appreciation for cats. So this debate quickly becomes polarized, not on your show, but in the broader society.
Sure, no, I hear that. Let me pick up on something, and I don't want to get lost in the numbers here, but these numbers talk about billions of birds and billions of small mammals being killed by cats. If it were millions, is it still an issue, Wayne Pacelli? And then I'll get back to you, Bob Curry.
Yes, it's certainly an issue, no matter if it's one-tenth of what the latest report estimates or if it's one-one-hundredth. I mean, I do think this is really a big, big number. And I wrote in my blog on our website that I thought that, you know, this is a credible publication, this is peer-reviewed science, but it is derivative, and it's really educated guesswork. But no matter the number, it's a serious issue.
Well, let me go back to you, Bob Curry, because you were talking about some of the research that you've done on island populations, looking at the impact of cats on certain bird species, I guess. But you also said to me during the break, think about Fairmount Park, which is a large park in Philadelphia. That's also an island. Flesh that out for us.
Right. Well, where ecologists are especially concerned about the trap, neuter, release types of approaches is that it doesn't completely address the issue of the hunting that those cats do when they're out in the environment. So on the one hand, owned cats, where the owner has the control over whether the cat goes outdoors or not, that's certainly an area where a lot could be done to work with owners to encourage them to keep their cats indoors. From the research paper, the percentage of the mortality that was estimated to be caused by owned cats compared to the unowned wildcats or feral cats was less than a quarter, but still a large number. So there certainly is some room for work there to encourage owners of cats to and keep their cats inside. The feral cats and the colonies of TNR cats.
Trap, neuter, release.
Yes. Raise a bigger concern. Those cats, even if they're fed, as Dr. Temple mentioned, will still hunt. It's pretty clear that most of them are active hunters. And if they're in areas where native wildlife would need to breed, so Fairmount Park is a good example,
right.
The Hines Wildlife Refuge in Tinicum, Central Park in New York, they're surrounded by colonies of maintained feral cats. And those cats are going to go into those areas and hunt. So if those birds are species that whose populations are in trouble, then the added pressure from the predation on top of whatever other challenges the populations face could put them over the edge.
Let me go back to you, Wayne Pacelli, and you mentioned trap, neuter, and release, and that looks like at least an approach to dealing with perhaps feral cats, these cats that are living in the wild and killing small mammals, killing birds. That seems like a humane way to go, but it also seems like a cumbersome way to go, that you have to trap an individual cat, neuter it, and then send it, release it back into the wild, so to speak, or back into a park. Is there enough people to do this to deal with the cat problem?
Well, Marty, this is really one of the critical issues that kind of stems from the research that's been done. You know, if we accept, and I think just about everybody does, that cats do predate on a good number of mammals and birds, what do we do with this information?
Right.
And this is where I think some of the voices on this call in the conservation community, the wildlife biology community, have it wrong. They have it wrong on a very practical level. The feral cat advocates are not advocates for keeping feral cats outside. We have a circumstance in our society because of reckless ownership of animals and because of the natural fecundity of these animals that they populate outdoor settings. And especially in more temperate environments, they can, you know, live adequately throughout the year. The feral cat advocates and humane organizations in general are the ones who are saying, keep the animals indoors. They're the ones that have put hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars into cat sterilization programs. Groups like ours have put enormous amounts of money into that. The feral cat advocates, and specifically the advocates of trap, neuter, and return, including the Humane Society, which is a very strong proponent of TNR programs, are saying, listen, these folks are an incredible labor pool. Tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people. It's one of the great underground movements in the United States, the feral cat lovers and the TNR advocates. They are addressing the problem by capturing and sterilizing animals. If you didn't have them, you would have many more cats in all likelihood than you have now. And those folks would not commit their labor if they were conscripted into, and they could not be conscripted into, catching and then killing cats. There is no support within the humane community for doing so. So you either don't have their labor and you leave it up to mysterious people who would somehow trap and kill the cats, or you use the labor of these cat advocates to sterilize the population. And then consistent with that, they're also educating people to keep cats indoors, like the Humane Society of the United States is doing, and promoting widely sterilization program so we can drive down euthanasia levels in this country.
Let me quickly reintroduce you. That's Wayne Pacelli, President, Chief Executive Officer of the Humane Society of the United States, joining us by telephone. Bob Curry with us in our Philadelphia studios. He's an ornithologist, ecologist, professor of biology at Villanova University. We're talking about a new report looking at cats and seeing cats as a threat to wildlife, killing billions of birds a year, killing many more billions of small mammals a year as well. And it's a study that's gotten quite a reaction. And we are talking about what we can do to deal with this threat to wildlife and whether cats and everyone else can all get along. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. So Bob Curry, picking up on what Wayne Pacelli just said, which is that, you know, you've got these feral cat advocates, you know, use them as a kind of a resource to at least neuter these cats so they're not going to be having more babies.
Well, from the ecological side of things, that certainly is a positive effort. The challenge is that it's extremely difficult to do it thoroughly enough to actually manage the cat pressure on the wildlife populations to the point that it actually goes down.
Mm. Because there are too many cats?
Too many cats and too many abandoned cats added to the feral population. So the influx of new cats that have to then be neutered and released makes it very challenging to do it thoroughly enough to actually reduce the amount of impact that the feral population has. This is mainly, I think, an issue in urban and suburban areas. It's a different situation when it's out in rural areas where it's barn cats, and that's a different situation.
But do you think, are you talking about euthanasia? I mean, the idea of and you know, I don't want to be overly dramatic here, but killing cats?
No ecologist likes to have to do that, but in situations, as I mentioned, with the naive animals on islands, sometimes there's no alternative. There is no labor pool if it's an uninhabited island, uninhabited by people, but inhabited by cats. There really is no alternative.
Because there's no predator for the cat?
Often that's the case, right?
So,
for example, one of the birds I worked
on
was...
Hold on, Wayne. We'll get right to you. Go ahead, Bob.
A species of mockingbird in Galapagos, there's 300 individuals, period, for the entire species. So there should be more, but the island that they used to live on is covered in cats, has a very tiny village of about 30 people that live there, but the cats have been there for 100 years running around and preventing the birds from surviving on the larger island.
Go ahead.
So that species cannot survive without removing those cats.
So, Wayne, what do we do about that?
Well, I just want to be very clear that again, we at the Humane Society of the United States are ardent advocates for bird protection and for protection of small mammals in the wild. We're also advocates for cats, and we've been the leaders in working in a number of island ecosystems, some of the California islands, and working with state and federal management authorities in certain cases for trap and removal. In fact, at one of our wildlife rehabilitation centers in California, we have a group of cats who are in an enclosed area who were trapped humanely from an island setting, and now they live in an enriched environment in an enclosed setting. Mm-hmm. So, again, I want to be clear that there should be no disagreement that outdoor cats can have a predation impact. Where I think some of the advocates of wildlife only are focused, they have a naive view, in my opinion, on how this is going to be accomplished. There is simply not enough money. It is a practical impossibility to capture and round up and kill these cats. No one is going to do it. The infrastructure does not exist. So you have a choice for the literally hundreds of thousands of feral cat advocates out there who would not be involved in a trap and killing program. Why discourage them? Why not help organize their efforts even more, as we are doing? And training programs are going on all around the country to put more pressure in the best sort of way, pressure on these feral cat populations to sterilize them, to stabilize and ultimately reduce their numbers in a very science-based way, looking at their reproductive capacity and how many cats need to be sterilized in a colony in order to drive down total numbers. That science-based work is going on all around the country, and this rather simple framing of the issue that we've got to have trap and kill and that TNR is a problem does not really reflect an understanding of the realities of what's going on in the humane community, nor does it really recognize what the practical impossibilities of the first approach are.
Well, I'm looking at something here that actually comes from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service talking about birds that are killed and the various causes, cats, which we have been talking about, flying into buildings, flying into power lines, vehicle collisions, pesticides, flying into communication towers, flying into wind turbines. And I'm back to you, Bob Curry. You know, if you stack cats against humans, who's the bigger threat, you think, to birds?
Well, the new study suggests that cats are one of the biggest impacts in the U.S. Certainly, habitat maintaining habitat and stopping the destruction of habitat is a huge problem for many, many species of birds and mammals. It's very hard to measure the relative impact of these different factors. And there's a lot of uncertainty in any of the estimates. For this current study, one of the biggest areas of uncertainty is what is the population of the unowned cats out in the wild? It's extremely hard to estimate that. So if that number is off one way or the other, the impact could either be much smaller than some of the other factors or much bigger.
But picking up on what Wayne Pacelli was saying about, look, and he said this several times, but I think his point is this, is isn't there a way to mobilize people that care about cats to deal with this issue?
I think that's great, yeah. But it has to be done, as Wayne said, in a very scientifically based manner, including the full understanding, as much as we can all gather, about the impact of those cats. Even once the group is managed, you still have to figure out what is their impact and are there ways to reduce that impact.
Wayne Pacelli, about a minute or so before our second break here, but is your advice then to cat owners, keep your cat indoors?
Absolutely. My cat, Mungo, we play with her all the time, and she has a very enriched lifestyle in an indoor setting. Cats can thrive and do well. You can't just leave them be. I mean, you do have to stimulate them and give them as good a life as possible. But the average lifespan for an indoor cat, you know, maybe 11, 12, 13 years, whereas the average lifespan of an outdoor cat may be 1 to 3 years. So it's worse for them to be outdoors because they get killed by predators. Mm-hmm. There are predators on cats, not on the island ecosystems where the predators never made it there, at least the larger predators. But in the continental United States, there are coyotes and there are foxes and there are dogs and there are lots of other predators. So you have automobile strikes. You have lots of threats to cats, including intra-specific aggression between cats. So better to keep them indoors. So that's a big plea from me to all the cat lovers out there. If you care about cats and you care about wildlife, keep them indoors.
And that's Wayne Pacelli, President and Chief Executive Officer of the Humane Society of the United States. He joins us along with Bob Curry, who's an ornithologist, ecologist, and professor of biology at Villanova University. And we are talking about a study that just came out talking about outdoor cats, free-range cats, as a major threat to wildlife, including birds and small mammals. And we have a full bank of calls here, so I do want to get to our callers after this very short break. Surprise, surprise. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Penn Medicine supports WHYY. Have you been feeling depressed, anxious? The Integrative Medicine and Depression Research Unit at Penn Medicine is studying the causes and treatment of mood disorders. You may be eligible to participate in a research study looking at the effects of natural supplements to treat the symptoms of depression or anxiety. Initial evaluations determine eligibility for treatment. To learn more about Penn Medicine's Integrative Medicine and Depression Research Unit, 215-662-3462. 215-662-3462.
Open Connections, a progressive educational environment, supports WHYY. At Open Connections, youth ages 2 through 18 attend programs 1 to 3 days a week from September to June. Guided by their principles of respect, freedom, responsibility, and natural learning, Open Connections serves as a community base for young people and their families seeking an innovative, collaborative, and process-conscious educational environment. An open house at their campus in Newtown Square is Sunday, February 10th at 4 p.m. Details at openconnections.org.
I'm Marty Moscowain. Today on Radio Times, a conversation with Al Gore about his new book, The Future, and a discussion about a new study about predator cats. Where else do you get that kind of diverse programming? That's what we do 2 hours a day, 5 days a week, 52 weeks a year on Radio Times. Please support this unique service and become a member of WHYY. Here's that phone number. It's 1-888-345-9499. That's 1-888-345-WHYY. You can also pledge online at WHYY.org. Thanks. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowain. Getting various responses to a report by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the Smithsonian Conservation Biology Institute saying that free-ranging cats were responsible for killing almost 2.5 birds and 12 billion mammals every year in the United States. Our guests are Bob Curry and Wayne Pacelli. We have a full bank of calls here. Let's see what Ann from Wincote wants to say. And Ann, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning.
I have three cats, and two of them are house cats. The third one we got as a feral kitten, and as she matured, it became hard to keep her inside all the time. And so she does go out sometimes, but she was bringing home a bird a day. Mm. I'm also a birder, and it was just unacceptable to have her hunting like that. And I was pretty desperate and went online and Googled, what can I do to keep my cat from killing birds? And there's somebody out there selling cat bibs. They're made out of neoprene with a Velcro tab that fits over the cat's collar. And it restricts, it somehow it affects their timing when they jump.
Hmm.
And she hasn't brought home a bird in 2 years.
Well, that's fascinating. And I have to say, Bob Curry is nodding his head. I want to get a response from Bob and then from you, Wayne.
Well, it's an interesting dimension of the issue is what can be done to work with cats that are going to be outside, if they are going to be outside, to reduce their potential for killing birds and mammals as they go out and move, as the cats move around. Bells have been suggested but have been shown not to really work very well. Many of the birds that are killed are very young birds. As soon as they leave the nest and they're on the ground, they're vulnerable. And they don't know to react to a bell, even if the bell is ringing. Also, cats are pretty good at learning how to move so that the bell doesn't ring if they're careful about it. Some of these other approaches, like the bibs, could be great. That's exactly the kind of modification of if they're going to be outside, how do we work with that to reduce their potential impact? So that's a good avenue to take.
Does that make sense to you, Wayne?
Well, I think that innovations in this realm are definitely welcome, and whether it's alerting the birds or increasing the degree of difficulty of cats killing the animals, I think is a great way to go. I will say that another measure is I know a lot of people who have homes that fit with this can create an exclosure as an attachment to their house, so the cat can basically have an outdoor type experience, but he or she is enclosed in an area where animals, wild animals, can't get in.
Thanks for calling in, and let's see what Antonia from Levittown has to say. Antonia, go ahead. You're on Radio Times. Yes, go ahead. You're on the air. Hi.
Thank you. I have some experience with trap, neuter, release. And I'm very surprised to hear the researchers say that it doesn't work. In my experience with resources behind it, as Wayne Pacelli pointed out, it absolutely does work. And you'll get a dedicated force of volunteers who will continue to trap and neuter that population and monitor it over time. I think part of the problem is, in fact, lack of resources. But the suggestion that it would be somehow easier to trap and euthanize the cats is also pretty naive. You really need to do this with the knowledge of that cat colony or that group of cats. And the volunteers who do TNR do develop that. And there are some notable success stories. I have lived in California and done TNR there. It might be even harder because of the population increase in a mild climate. But there are absolutely success stories there where you can stabilize and then begin to reduce the population of cats. So I don't know what the policy recommendation coming out of this latest Smithsonian study is, but if it's that researchers should just be allowed to trap and euthanize, I think they're in for not only a difficult road, but a surprise at the end, because they will not get all the cats, and only a few need to get through to increase the population.
Okay,
you really need to
Antonia,
monitor those colonies.
I hear you. No, it's a very good point, and I do want. Let me toss that first to you, Wayne Pacelli, and she's saying that this TNR can be effective with enough people and enough money.
And there are, we estimate there are 20,000 animal welfare groups in the country, and many thousands are devoted specifically to cats. And then you have just this underground force of cat advocates. It's just extraordinary. I mean, I've been involved in this cause for many years, and wherever I go to meet Humane Society of the United States members, I find these incredible cat advocates. And I think really it is unleashing them and letting them do their great humane work and then providing resources to them. And I think that city or county animal care and control agencies should be investing in them and helping, because it reduces all sorts of problems. I mean, if you are really tackling this problem, you're going to be addressing animal homelessness in general, which is why shelters and animal care and control agencies really existed in the first place.
Well, Bob, I mean, if there were enough people and enough money, enough resources, would TNR work? I mean, Antonia says it worked. I mean, I'm not sure if her definition of working is the same as yours. But
it boils down to what is the definition of success? You know, what does working mean? Stabilization of the population would be a first step. Reducing the population in terms of reducing the impact on wildlife would be the next step. But that comes back to the question of, can you really reduce over a long period of time the total population of these cats that are out hunting? And that's where, if people are adding additional cats through abandonment, just so you're getting new strays or cats moving in from other areas, that complicates the issue very much. Another resource issue that comes up that we haven't touched on yet is the need to vaccinate the cats as well, or to treat them for disease, because that's another dimension of the problem. Absolutely, having groups like the Humane Society get their funds and their volunteer involvement tackling the issue is great. But it, as Dr. Temple mentioned, it needs to be done without a disconnect, so that we keep the conversation about both the numbers of the cats and their cumulative impact, especially if it's wildlife populations that can't handle it. Piping plover, for example, is in trouble.
This is a bird, of course, yes.
On the shores of New Jersey and everywhere. So if they're suffering from other threats as well, having a high density of cats nearby might be the straw that breaks the camel's back in terms of the local population.
We've been focusing on the United States for all the obvious reasons, but you know, New Zealand, which apparently has a cat problem, in that there are so many cats, and I think it has the highest cat ownership population in the world, but nonetheless, it is having a devastating impact on the bird population there. And some are saying it's, you know, it's time to get rid of the cats. I'd just be curious if you've thought your way through this and if there's another resolution to that issue.
Is that to me, Marty?
That is to you, Wayne Pacelli. Yeah.
Yes. Well, I do, you know, not just New Zealand. I mean, go to Italy, go to Greece, go to other parts of the world. You see enormous populations of feral cats. I was recently in India, and there you have street dog populations. We estimate there are 750 million dogs in the world, but more than 300 million of them are street dogs. And we've developed something called capture, neuter and spay, vaccinate, and return for dogs. And I think in some of these communities where you do have a lot of street dogs, you see a lower population of street cats, precisely because of the predation factor, the dogs taking some of the cats. But this is a global problem. And in the United States, we're actually ahead of the game from many other countries, because we do have a built-in infrastructure, and we have a very well-developed animal welfare movement that is not just doing TNR. I think the key point is talking about spaying and neutering. I mean, animals being sterilized and not reproducing, so that we don't have more animals for the number of available homes, and then we don't have animals kind of pushing out into the community in a broader sense, so people feel, okay, I've got too many, I'm going to release them. I think all of that is in sync, along with fostering this notion of responsible pet care. Responsible pet care does not mean abandoning an animal out into the environment where they're at risk of predation, being struck by an automobile, disease, and the like. And we've got to foster a notion that these are members of the family. You don't just turn them out and have them crossing streets and coming across, you know, packs of dogs or coyotes or foxes. That's not responsible if you are a careful custodian of your animal.
Let me get Dan from, looks like, Berwyn to join us on Radio Times. And Dan, go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay. Hi. Thanks. Yeah. So I have some personal experience with this. I have a house in Avalon, New Jersey, where I had some neighbors feeding the cats. So I've dealt with some people. I'm just very skeptical about the neuter and return thing because they were sort of claiming they were going to do that. Never really did it. Had about $8,000 worth of damage underneath my house.
From cats?
From the cats. Yeah, they got under there. They nested. The smell was horrible. They tore out all my ductwork underneath, making nests and all that sort of thing. And just interesting, I can't prove anything, but on what we call the Seven Mile Island, which is Avalon and Stone Harbor, we have two very, very large bird sanctuaries. There's not one bird in either sanctuary, and the feral cat problem is rampant down there. I mean, they're running all over the place. I can't prove that there are no birds because of the cats, but it's kind of a coincidence that in the last 5 or 10 years, the feral cats have started to sort of overrun the island. And all of a sudden, you know, we have seagulls and all, but there are no, you know, routine nesting birds. Even some of the herons are gone. My neighbors on the street have lost all their birds that they used to feed. So we've had sort of this big neighborhood battle going on about what, because we have some people feeding them, and then we have other people, you know, that would like to get rid of them. And I don't see what, you know, you neuter them, return them, then they're still going to live there for,
well, Dan,
you know, 5 or 10 years. And if you miss one, you know, you have a big problem because they really seem to reproduce quickly.
Well, Dan, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let me toss it to you, Bob Curry, because he's, in a sense, talking about an island population.
Well, it's a little different when it's a island that has never had predators, because then the prey are just vulnerable to a crazy degree. So that's a different situation. But islands in general, whether it's a habitat island or a littoral island, do have the issue of it being a closed population. It's not open to immigration coming in and out. So that actually can be an advantage because it's easier to manage the predators in that situation. You can keep track of them. You don't have to worry about the population being augmented by additional individuals coming in from outside. So that actually creates some good opportunities to really have some success, especially where there are species that need the habitat that's limited to those areas.
Dan Wayne was talking about what he describes an irresponsible cat owner, said they were going to do something about this problem, and they didn't do it. And I guess it raises that question about responsible cat owners.
Well, to me again, Marty?
Yeah, to you again, Wayne.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
You know, one of the problems that I'm having with the broader discussion that's been playing out over several weeks is that folks who are diagnosing the problem but at a loss for providing a solution are saying we shouldn't be doing TNR.
Mm-hmm.
That's like blaming the people who are trying to, you know, end starvation in the world for saying, well, they're still starving people. These are the folks that are on the front lines. These are the folks that are doing the most to address the problem. And again, I think that there's not one magic bullet here. Literally, the cat is out of the bag in our society. We've got, you know, 75 million cats in homes in America. We have untold numbers of cats roaming outside. It's got to be a multi-pronged strategy to deal with the problem. Having TNR aggressively done, science-based to the greatest extent possible, spaying and neutering our animals, and promoting responsible pet care. Those are the struts for a successful challenge of the problem. The idea of mass capture and mass killing will never go over with the American public.
And that's Wayne Pacelli joining us along with Bob Curry. And I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. You're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY. Let me go back to you, Bob, and I'm just thinking about those, perhaps even those islands where the bird population has been decimated in many ways. How do you build it back? I mean, is it somehow getting the cats off the islands, and then the bird population will naturally reproduce and come back?
Basically, yeah, that's the right that's how it plays out. But that approach is limited to uninhabited islands not inhabited by people, especially if they're islands that are protected, a part of a national park, whether it's the Channel Islands in California or the Galapagos or any number of other islands around the world. If there are native species that are going to completely go extinct because of the pressure from predators, then you have to have a very thorough approach. It gets tricky because if you've got both introduced rodents as well as introduced cats, you can't get rid of the cats. However you're going to do it, whether it's removing them, as Wayne talked about with the San Nicolas Island, or eradication, your rodents are going to go through the roof. So it has to be done in a comprehensive way. And that's being done in several places around the world. I also work on Cozumel Island in Mexico, which does not have native predators, but it has a human population of 70,000 people, a Mexican city. So we're not going to eradicate cats on that island. So that is a perfect place where TNR, mm-hmm. working with the whole community to get everybody on board, might be a great way to go. Again, because it's a closed population, it's much easier to manage it comprehensively for the whole municipality.
Well, we're going to end on that positive note. My thanks to you, Bob Curry, for joining us today in Radio Times. And Wayne Pacelli, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Wayne Pacelli, President, Chief Executive Officer of the Humane Society of the United States. Bob Curry is an ornithologist, ecologist, and professor of biology at Villanova University, just outside of Philadelphia. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes. We did start a Facebook conversation yesterday on this very issue, and I'm sure you can jump on to that. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, Dennis Devine, and Debbie Builder. Our intern is Katie Ricciardi. I'm Marty Moscowain. Thank you so much for joining us.